hello once again. Boomer Tech Radio. I am Bob Belongi.
And I'm Brenda Belongi.
And we are analog living in a digital world. Welcome to the program with goodies, gadgets, gizmos, tech news that you can use. Oh, yes. We go through all the news stories having to do with tech. Try to leave the disaster stories to people who are better equipped to talk about disaster stories. We talk about tech on this show, whatever it happens to be, tech stuff that we find interesting. Right before the show, I was talking to a coworker here at KCNR, Bob Martin, who has occasionally guest hosted on this show when Brenda's been too busy. And I noticed that his lightning connector, he has an iPhone 6. I noticed that the cable that comes from Apple, which has a very soft rubber plastic sort of coating on it, you know the cables that come with the
very
iPhones.
Flexible.
It's extremely flexible, but it's also extremely delicate. And his cable has split right where it goes into the lightning connector and split back to reveal part of the shielding. Now, you can't get a shock off this thing. But it looks yucky, you know, and eventually it'll deteriorate the wires.
Well, it doesn't support the wires either.
Right, they'll eventually keep flexing until they break off. So I was showing him Amazon sells a neat pack. It's three lightning cables with this nylon braid. It looks like a metal braid over them, but it's actually kind of a silvery nylon.
Mm-hmm.
Tough as could be. They're not as flexible as the lightning stock lightning cables, but they're much more durable. Work like a champ. I had no issues plugging them into my iPad Pro 12.9. And having the three different lengths is very, very handy. And they're about $20 on Amazon. So you may want to take a look at these aftermarket cables if your Apple cables, your Apple Lightning cables have started to fall apart. But this led me to kind of a thought. This is how the show works. We see something and we kind of scurry down the rabbit trail. Connector mania. Now, Brenda, you and I have been dealing with two different connectors for the last couple of years, either a lightning connector or the micro USB.
Now there's a third one in the house.
Now there's a third one. So micro USB, if you look at it, turn it on its side. Now there's, you don't see many of the mini USBs anymore. About the only place you'll run into a mini USB is if you own a GoPro camera, uses the mini USB.
Uh-huh.
Or an external hard drive, most of those use a mini USB, which if you look at it compared to the micro USB, which is what most cell phones use, is a little bit thicker.
Mm-hmm, a little taller.
It's a little bit older design.
Boxier.
Yeah. But for most devices nowadays, most tablets use the mini USB external power supplies, you know, the battery packs that you can get to get you through the day, use a micro USB to recharge, and then a full-size USB connector for the output, and then you plug your cable into that. So the cables have a definite, you know, hot end and plug and device end.
Yeah.
You have an A connector and then your B connector, or what's called the micro connector. Well, along comes, a couple of years ago, it was announced that the USB Consortium, which we've met these people, remember that at CES?
Yep.
Interesting bunch of people, much like the SD card people. It's an industry group, and they come up with all the standards.
Yeah.
And then they go and promote those standards. Same with the HDMI people. They have a standard, and all these companies that want to use these connectors, whether it be USB-C or HDMI, or in the case of the micro SD card, they pay licensing fees to the company that is holds the patent on these designs.
That's how they make the money.
Yeah. So along has come now the USB-C connector. The nice thing about the USB-C connector is that it is similar to a lightning connector in that it doesn't care which way it's facing when you plug it in. A micro USB connector does care because it's slightly D-shaped. If you're trying to plug it in upside down, and we've all done that, right?
Oh, you can easily try to do that.
Yeah, and usually you simply won't be able to get the connector in. But if you force it, of course, you can cause some damage to your phone, which will then yell at you, like Brenda's just did, although she was not trying to plug in a connector.
Thought I had that turned off.
Yeah. Yes, we've all, it used to be, you know, somebody's beeper going off or somebody's phone going off during a meeting, and that's always like, and that's when you can't get it to stop. You know, have you noticed that? You're sitting there and you're stabbing at it, and everybody's turned to look at you.
Now people don't even pay attention.
Yeah, yeah. So I have in my bag now, I have my iPad Lightning connectors. I have my Samsung Connect Tab 8 in, which is a micro USB. And then I have the USB-C, which is for our Note 8s. And I don't, I've only got one Note 8 cable, so I'm a little concerned about what happens if I misplace that. However, I have a cordless charger. Brenda's got a cordless charger coming, a wireless charger.
Yep.
And that what's neat about that is you just plop it in the cradle.
Yep.
Boom, it starts charging.
You can, via that little adapter that came in the phone box.
Right,
right. Go from a micro USB
to the USB-C.
Yeah. Mini and micro always get mixed up.
Unless you have a case on your phone.
Well, no, it depends on the case. We have a case, and it works just fine. It's all about how accessible the connector is. But they did this smart, both with an adapter you can get for the Lightning connector for your iDevices, and this little gizmachi for the USB-C on...
It's a little bit longer.
It's a little bit longer, yeah. Because some of them were so short that you couldn't get things... The phone protective case would get in the way, but this is not like that. Mm. So it's not too bad.
All right.
And my experience has been pretty... The bad part is, though, that they're tiny.
Yeah.
They're like 3/8 of an inch long or something like that, and they're very easy to lose.
Yeah. Oh, well, I have that problem with my stylus, and I'm always paranoid that I'm going to misplace the darn thing.
I'm
Take
sure
it
they,
out, put it right back in.
I'm sure they would sell you another one.
For $20 or something.
Probably more than that.
Speaking of the Note 8, we have had them now for a couple of weeks. I'm impressed with the battery life. How about you, Brian?
Oh, absolutely. I'm amazed at how much battery life there is. And I'm sure part of that has to do with the physical size of the device, that they can pack more battery
right.
in there.
3,300 milliamp hours.
Yeah, still, it lasts a long time. Mine goes days and days.
Yep.
I don't use, you know, I'm not a hog on it, but...
I'm a power user on my phone. I always have lately I've had location services turned on because I'm basically putting the phone through sort of a torture test. I've used navigation quite a bit, and I'm able to get 2 full days of use out of the phone before I have to recharge it. My Galaxy S7, and using the exact same setup of programs, because this was what was neat. Time was when you bought a new cell phone, you had to transfer everything
was backed
up. Reload everything. In this case, the guy in the store, bless his heart, there at the Verizon store, punched a bunch of keys, and everything populated on the screen almost immediately.
Yep.
He tied him into the store network, and everything loaded up.
It was pretty amazing.
Yeah. So far so good on the Galaxy. I'm not Note. I know a lot of people have gone ahead and gotten them. We've got a couple of cases. I talked about my SpyGen case. I'm pretty happy with that. I'm not as happy with the belt case that I wound up with, but I will find something else, because right now Night Eyes is not making a good case for a belt for a Note 8. Not yet. They've got one for extra large phones. But it the reviews, and this that's always good to check the reviews. The reviews say it doesn't quite fit the Note 8. It's a little bit of a squeeze to get it in there.
So. Ah, they'll fix that, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. One can only hope. So so far so good with our Galaxy Note 8s. So thought we'd update you on the saga of Kickstarter. Now, if you've ever thought about getting behind a Kickstarter project, we have some interesting feedback on that. And Brenda, you can kind of talk about, there we are at CES in the booth of a major manufacturer checking out their products.
Right, the Steadicams. Mm-hmm. And many years ago, I think it was the first CES I went to with you, I got into a full body Steadicam, and it was
the full harness.
Yeah, the full harness, and it's pretty interesting. It's not terribly well designed for women in some respects, but it worked just fine. And they didn't do, you know, a lot of adjustments or anything like that. So at that time, I think you could buy one of those for something like $4,500, and then
yeah.
Go to the school and learn how to do all that stuff. And most people have seen some, you know, the making of, and seen Steadicam in a documentary or something
right,
like that.
Right.
But these are, you know, today's cameras are tiny,
yep.
Really, between the GoPro, if that's the kind of thing you have, or just your smartphone.
Right. You can take excellent video on the smartphone.
Outstanding.
In fact, we do some video production, and our B camera is an old Samsung Galaxy S5, shoots 1440, 30 frames a second. Beautiful video off of that thing. If you're not needing to do a bunch of zooming or anything like that, it's a whole lot easier. And we've discovered it's not as intimidating to people because they're used to seeing a smartphone pointed at them. But real hard to get good, stable, steady shots.
Yep, it's true. So because of some of the work we do and our interest in using the smartphones for video production, when we came across these little handheld Steadicams, we were intrigued.
Yeah, Steadicam Volt. And what Tiffin did is rather than develop the product and put it out and not knowing what the response would be, they made it a Kickstarter project. And I have a feeling this was some engineers at Tiffin, and Tiffin is the company that owns Steadicam now. And they told these guys, okay, if you can get enough people interested, and we're going to gauge interest through this Kickstarter campaign mm-hmm. and get people to pony up the money to develop this product all the way through to market, we will have the name on it.
Now, if you're not familiar with a Kickstarter campaign, it's basically you're making an investment in a product or service or something, whatever it is.
Yep.
And you might lose
your money.
That's right. You might lose your money. Well, in a lot of cases, you do lose your money from the point of view that you purchased something. But what you're doing is making it possible for something to be developed or exist or what have you. So a lot of times when you're in a Kickstarter campaign, there's a good value there for sure.
Right. For instance, we got two of these for about 1.5 times the price of just one. We got a pretty substantial discount off
right.
of two of them. And we were part of the creation process. Now, they were originally promised to ship them in June. And anybody who's been involved in a Kickstarter campaign would be there to tell you, probably not going to be quite that soon. And as it turned out, they did not ship until late August into September.
Well, and that's about 3 months later than we were expecting, or they originally projected. But I think what ended up happening,
there was a design change.
There was a design change, right. They got to doing some research and development on it, and Tiffin is noted for sending out good stuff.
Yeah.
So they don't want to send something substandard out.
Right.
So we're grateful for that, and the products that we got were definitely not chintzy or whatever, and they work beautifully.
Yeah. Now the core of this of the Steadicam Volt is a electronic gimbal system that senses the movement and corrects for it in real time, and it holds the platform steady. And this is adapted from a Chinese company that makes drone videos, and so it's a little bit like the DJI handle and the Karma handle, in that you can mount a camera on this and you move it all over the place. But this incorporates also that Steadicam counterweight, which is a long curved arm that is a counterbalance. So you've got a fairly long moment arm. So you pre-balance the camera and then you turn on the powered gimbal. And Brenda's seen me hold this thing. The camera stays steady as a rock, and my hand is swinging all over the place.
Right.
And when you walk along, it's just that very smooth, distinctive, steady cam look.
Well, some folks might say, big deal. There's image stabilization software in your phone or camera, whatever you have.
But that's only so good.
Right. That in itself is okay for minor things, but these Steadicams can take a lot of motion and the camera just does not move. Right. You know, the point of view, it looks very steady. It's almost like you're on a wheeled tripod, on an absolutely flat surface. Yeah. Yeah.
So if you do a lot of sports shooting, or if you do, what we're going to use these for is filming dancers, it's a two-handed operation. Rather than trying to hang on to the little tiny smartphone, you've got a pistol grip in your hand, and then you're guiding the platform around with the other hand. Works like a champ. And we're going to do some serious video with this thing next time we do this event that we do every year. So if you want to look at one of these things, they're about $199, are available at Best Buy. You can get them through Amazon. It's called the Steadicam Volt. So far, so good. Once you have to be patient when you set it up, because you have to put counterbalances on so that it is inherently balanced. And then what the electronic gimbal does is that it makes these minor corrections. Set of battery should last you about 6 hours of shooting, which is longer than your phone battery is going to last.
Probably, yeah. Especially if you're shooting video, you'll run out of storage space in your device.
Yep. So our first Kickstarter project backing, which maybe, I don't know if we'll ever do one like that again, it was educational. The company just really did a good job of keeping backers informed of what was going on with the process. And they said, you know, we found something we want to change. It's going to take a little while to get it implemented. A few weeks later, okay, the prototype is ready. It tests out. Okay, the production run is done. They're going on the container ship. They're coming to the U.S. Okay, they're out of customs. They let people know each week what was happening.
Yeah, so you didn't just... I think it went in a black hole. Yeah, take your money and not. And the interesting thing, too, is a lot of times with a Kickstarter, they have a particular goal in mind. It's sort of like GoFundMe in that capacity, where they're looking for a certain number of investors or a certain amount of money. So we were told only X number were available. And once they met that goal, they were going to shut it down. And if they didn't meet that goal, because this is one of the ways that they were testing the interest in this.
Yeah.
If they didn't meet that goal, well, then, you know, you don't get your credit card charged, so to speak.
But they made their goal like in a couple of days.
Right.
There was so much interest in this product.
Yep.
And so far, people have been very happy with it.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. So if you're interested in filming things like you're walking along, or you're at a sports event and have to kind of jog down the field or whatever, this is the kind of device that can help keep that image fairly steady.
Much more steady.
So, yeah, so that the viewers don't all get motion sick.
Yeah. That's always fun. You know, the cell phone video that's all jumpy all over the place, and you're sitting there feeling like you need Dramamine to watch the piece of video. That just makes me crazy.
I'm going to have fun working with this on a boat that's rocking back and forth. And standing there trying to film something while the boat's rocking back and forth,
that
and it'll hold steady.
Yeah.
It should stay in place.
So good experiences there. Well, gee whiz. The company that just got itself hacked and revealed just about a third of the country's personal data to hackers has just won a IRS contract for fraud detection. That's right, boys and girls. Equifax was infiltrated by hackers. And 140 million Americans got their information handed out. The IRS is going to pay Equifax $7.25 million to verify taxpayer identities and help prevent fraud. Your tax dollars at work.
Well, what's even more interesting here is this was a non-competitive event because the IRS is in a dispute with another provider and they didn't want to have any gaps in protection. And I'm like, really, does it matter if Equifax is doing this with the IRS? There's probably plenty of people this would cover who've already lost their data to Equifax's hack.
Yeah, well, consider Equifax was hacked not once but twice, didn't bother telling consumers of the breach, and their response was so badly done that the CEO of the company was forced to step down. The House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee was not terribly amused by all of the above. Gee, at the end of the day, they still won themselves a $7.25 million contract in spite of being totally inept.
What can you say?
Maybe they should get into... No, I won't say it. I was going to say maybe they should get into weather forecasting. Don't! Oh, dear me. That was a gentle jab at my wife, who will make that joke herself. Oh, dear. So, let's see here. Oh, by the way, if you've ever owned... Maybe you've got an old Yahoo email floating around that you forgot you had. It's been hacked. Every single Yahoo password ever was part of that hack from a couple of years ago. I'm trying to find the story here. You know, one thing that drives me a little crazy. Oh, there it is. Official, your old password is totally worthless. This according to Mashable. By the way, if you like some of the stories that we're covering, you can go on to Flipboard and subscribe to the Boomer Tech Radio magazine, and you will find stories that have given us some inspiration here. The lesson here, of course, is don't reuse your passwords. Don't use the same password for 50 different accounts on the internet, because one of the all they have to do is get through one of them, and then they just brute force into your other passwords. Yeah, that's right. 3 billion passwords have been compromised. There weren't 3 billion people on the internet, but there were that many Yahoo accounts. Some people had several accounts. There were business accounts. Basically, at one time, everybody had a Yahoo account. And somewhere there is a database with all the usernames and passwords, and it is out in the wild.
Thank goodness I never had one.
You had to be like one of the few people who didn't actually have a Yahoo email.
Probably didn't have a computer at the time. Yeah, didn't do Yahoo.
Yeah. So
I still have my junky old box at hotmail.com, which is now Outlook, but you can still log in through hotmail.com.
Yeah. So you're saying, well, I don't have anything of interest to these people. It doesn't matter, because what they're doing is they now that they have a collection of passwords and emails picked up from here and there, the scripts will just try over and over and over logging into all these different sites. They'll hit a couple here, a couple there, not enough to hit the tripwires, and eventually one will unlock. It's like picklocking.
Right.
Eventually you'll get the right combination and a lock will pop open.
Yep.
Well, now they're in your stuff. So here's the thing. Do not use the same password on multiple sites, period. Even if you the most popular Yahoo password was 123456 7. That password turned up over 1,700 times, followed by the word password, which meant there were 780 idiots out there. Welcome 437 times by analyzing this database.
Oh, dear me. That's terrible.
So my little secret, you know, don't tell. Name of a, you know,
Open
ABC,
Sesame.
Yippee, Open Sesame, you know, come on. We've told you the best combinations for passwords. We'll see about reiterating that at some point. Pick a phrase and just run it all together is probably the most uncrackable password you can do. Boomer Tech Radio with Bob and Brenda. More the tech news you can use after this. Every week, goodies, gadgets, gizmos, tech news that you can use. So, augmented reality is changing the way we do a lot of things. Like buying furniture at IKEA, you slap on a headset and you see a room that's the same. You can actually bring in a picture of your house, of your room, and they put this thing in a computer. Then you put on a set of augmented reality glasses, and they put the IKEA furniture into the room on your glasses, which is pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, there's a new dating app called Flirt AR, pronounced Flirter. It'll be coming out this next week for iOS. Later in the month, it'll use...
be available for Android
later. Available for the Android operating system. Using AR to help you find potential matches who are nearby. okay, there's a little creepy there. Use your phone to see who is at the same place you're at and make connections in real time. Works using geolocation to find people close by who meet your designated criteria. As you move your phone around, little bubbles with people's pictures pop up based on where you're looking. Okay. Does this sound like a stalker's dream?
Yeah, and
a predator's dream?
What was that? A similar thing. There was an app about getting together with people nearby. I mean, this is just a variation on that
theme.
Yeah,
girls near me.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a creepy one.
Yeah.
This
is just a variation on that theme.
Yeah. An interesting twist on the more static interfaces than apps like Bumble and Tinder. Well, what if, apparently, you know, and I'll admit, if you have signed up for this thing, obviously you're looking to be contacted, but it also, I don't know, this sounds like a way to, the app lets you opt out of being matched. Like if you want to walk around the grocery store in your sweats without being seen, turn off facial recognition. Things can get kind of weird privacy-wise, so I don't know. This sounds like something that could be misused. Now, for full disclosure, and we've mentioned it on the show, Brenda, how many people, you and I met through a dating online service before it was a thing.
Well, I don't know. I thought it was a thing then.
It wasn't because we kept having to explain it to people.
Oh, well, that's true.
You met how? Nowadays, it would be like, oh, okay. But in 2004, Match.com was just getting up to speed. It was, of course, there were no smartphones then. It was all done through your PC.
Yeah, all done through email.
I've talked about my radio show because I'm not that interesting. And Brenda listened to the radio show and apparently found something interesting. The rest, they say, is history. So here she is sitting across from me at the table here talking on a microphone with me.
And something's useful. Well, you had to reply.
Oh, yeah.
So there was that. And your selfie was dorky looking, which is what took me so long to send you a message.
Now we know.
I know. Yeah, I now know that. I didn't know much about it. I didn't know anything about selfies in those days.
So, yeah, this new dating app, I'm not going to give it much. I think they're going to run into problems.
Well, maybe so.
Maybe.
I think it's somewhat superficial. Because, ooh, you know.
On the other hand.
Handsome man, beautiful woman, whatever.
On the other hand.
There are profiles in there, though, so you can see.
You've got profiles. Mm-hmm. You can find somebody in the right age bracket and all that. On the other hand, it's probably less intrusive than hanging at the bar with your some guy comes up in polyester or, you know, bad teeth or something. Hey, you want a drink? You know.
That could still happen.
It can still happen. But on the app, I think the person in question is actually wanting to be contacted.
Oh, dear. You're going to get in trouble for maligning polyester and missing teeth.
Big Google event this week. Did you hear about that?
No.
Google went on stage.
What are they announcing now?
Oh, all kinds of neat things. For one thing, this is kind of neat. You notice that all personal assistants are girls. Is that sexist?
I don't know.
Do you think it's sexist that personal assistant voices are girls? Women?
No, I don't think it's sexist. It would only be sexist if you don't have an option for a male voice.
Thank you, Google Assistant. You can now add voice 2 under the assistant voice settings to give you a huskier sounding AI assistant, be it the iOS app, Pixel phone, or Google Home speaker. Voice 2 is a male sounding voice. There are other Siri has a male voice, although it's female by default. Same with Microsoft Cortana. That was actually voice sampled by Jen Taylor, an actress. Amazon's assistant, of course, named Alexa. But Google Assistant coming out of the pack because you've now got a choice to make it a male voice. Now, one of the reasons that the military early on adopted a female voice in voice response systems is that the female voice, as anybody who's ever attended grade school knows, a female voice cuts through noise much better. Anybody who's ever had a mother knows that the female voice gets your attention in a certain tone.
Star Trek Harcourt?
Yeah.
And we apologize for setting off your Amazon Echo.
Oh, dear me.
If indeed we did.
So how do you, if you have Google Assistant and you want to give him a try, companies adding these options. If you have a phone, a Google phone, open the Google Assistant app, tap on the three. I beg your pardon. I'm having a little bit of a congestion thing going here. The three-dot menu, open settings, open preferences, then assistant voice, switch from voice one, which is female, to voice two, which is male. This is in the U.S. English. This is probably a thing that is going to continue to expand because in some cultures, maybe they want a guy voice by default.
Whatever.
Now, if you notice that Alexa and Google Home have slightly different female voices, and
there you go, triggering off the Amazon Echo again.
Triggering them off, yeah.
That's the good thing about Google Assistant or Google Home.
Because it takes two words. Hey, Google.
Right. See, there. Just to be fair, right? You had to do it.
Yeah.
Or, okay, Google.
Yeah.
There. Now we've got everybody covered and irritated. Now, that's funny. When I said that, it fired off my phone.
Your phone fired. Probably
yes.
Mine, too.
And it, in this case, since it's an Android, and it actually took that note, but I didn't
I don't know if my note and our Google Home collaborate, because if I say the "Hey G" phrase, the Google speaker lights up, my phone lights up, and I give the "wake me up at 5 a.m." command.
That's,
the phone does not set an alarm, but the Google Home does. So I don't know if they've collaborated or what, because they are both tied to the same account on the same Google account.
Could be. Yeah. That's a good question.
So. Another trick that Google Assistant is coming up with now, it is a very powerful it's a machine learning system and a pretty powerful one, but some features that Google had working in the past don't work with the Assistant, but now Google is going to be able to identify songs, starting with the Pixel and Pixel 2 XL. They can identify songs being around them, whether you ask or not. Now, I do have the SoundHound app, which is I have used a couple of times to identify songs that are playing over the PA system or whatever. What is that tune? I don't remember it. And I've powered up SoundHound, and it does a pretty good job. On a similar note, we've talked about this for a while. A friend of ours asked about bird songs.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we pointed her towards an app for her Android phone that will identify about 250 different species of North American birds.
Just on the recording of the bird song.
Yeah.
So you don't actually have to see the bird and take a picture of it or anything like that. You just have to hear it.
Yeah. So devices, it isn't out just yet, but it should be out to devices. You know, what is this song? Or you can just get the SoundHound app. Which will, of course, identify the song and then immediately ask you if you want to buy it. Well, you know.
Stands there with its hand out, yes.
Well, it's similar to the FM radio. We discovered our Verizon phones won't enable the FM radio chip. Because why? Because Verizon wants you to have streaming music so you're using data, because FM radio doesn't use up your data plan.
Right.
But there's a lot of pressure because of what happened and
hurricane
Puerto Rico,
season, yeah.
That in some cases, FM radio transmitter sites are about the only thing still standing. And
it's a way to disseminate important information to the citizenry.
I'm betting that the FCC makes that something like the emergency alert system that can be enabled on a phone by user option.
So does that mean there would be a change perhaps in the radio industry and that FM would make something of a comeback from robot radio?
Possibly.
That could be interesting.
Yeah, there's a whole class of stations called low-power FMs that may make a company of very limited range, low-power FM transmitters. And these were real popular a couple of years ago. Those may make a comeback in shopping malls and things like that. So.
Good. When I go see the Christmas lights, now the low-power FM
synced
up thing.
Right, you can listen on your phone.
Listen on my phone.
By the way, a study on CNET, this is real interesting. Google's AI is roughly as smart as a six-year-old. Chinese researchers also found that Google's artificial intelligence technology is twice as smart as Apple's Siri and probably a whole lot smarter than Cortana.
Well, we knew that about Cortana. And Bixby's probably lower than Cortana.
AlphaGo may have unseated Chinese player as the Go champion. The artificial intelligence is actually no smarter than a six-year-old child. A study published Saturday showed Google's artificial intelligence technology scored best out of 50 systems that Chinese researchers tested against an AI scale they created. AI has a IQ score of 47.28, almost twice as smart as Siri's score, which scored just under 24. So the these things are not smarter than you.
Right, but what is amusing about this to me is that they take human tests, perhaps, and apply them to this device, which, of course, is one way to compare it to a human, but sometimes you feel like Google's assistant is smarter than you are because it'll predict what it is that you're thinking or answer questions you didn't even know you had.
Remember that there was a TV show, Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader?
Oh.
Yeah. In this case, Are You Smarter Than a First Grader? And the Chinese tested subjects who were 18, 12, and 6 on the same system and found out that the Google was roughly as smart as the 6-year-old. Now, of course,
I've met some pretty sharp 6-year-olds.
AI warriors include physicist Stephen Hawking and, of course, Elon Musk. They both won the 2015 Luddite Award and were branded AI alarmists. Hawking is a firm believer that AI could pose a real danger depending on who controls it. He argues that it could outsmart us and end technology. Musk is saying that he wants regulation and is worried that AI could start World War III.
In the meantime,
yeah,
there's explorations as to what kind of effects AI may have on us.
Right. AI ethics. Now, DeepMind is a UK company, which Google purchased. It's a real interesting thing. Right now, as far as we know, like I said, there is no actual intelligence in these machine learning systems.
No,
they can draw conclusions based on presented facts.
For patterns.
Yeah, looking for patterns. They can very, very quickly scan for patterns. But they can't come up with original thoughts. They are not self-aware, and it's up to be a long time before they become self-aware, if they ever do. The DeepMind Ethics and Society Unit is dedicated to exploring the impact and morality of the way AI shapes the world around us. I am far more worried about this technology being used to keep tabs on our every move, and the humans that are controlling the technology using that as tools of control and manipulation than I am about the Terminator walking around shooting people. about the technology being used as a gathering tool.
We could use a Commander Data, though. That would be interesting. Oh, my goodness. Well, he had his evil brother as well. So.
Yeah, Lore.
Yeah, it's either one or the other.
AI morality. Now, there we've talked about the uncomfortable topic of forming a relationship with a emotionless machine, a la Eve in
Ex Machina.
In Ex Machina, you know, who really didn't have human emotions. She was good at emulating them, and the system was able to pass Turing tests, which is a real interesting test to determine, is it an actual thinking device or is it simply a very fast calculating device?
So what's kind of interesting about this. And he goes, so why do we need that anyway? Because it turns out that if AI engineers don't think about ethics and the potential negative effects of on things before they start, you know, getting really into it and things start to develop very quickly, what happens is that the AI actually, or the engineers unwittingly, may amplify, accelerate, and exacerbate problems.
Okay, for instance, fake news,
right.
Rampant online abuse. People are drawing conclusions very, very rapidly. And, of course, we come back to Tay, the Microsoft bot.
Oh, yes. The other side of that is, the way things are in politics and the public realizing that AI can cause all sorts of societal problems because its makers just didn't think of that, like with Tay.
Yeah, or the sex robot that was so abused, it was put out on display and people got so crazy abusing it that they broke the thing.
Right.
You know, if the robot did have feelings, it was it would have had a right to be upset.
Well, in a lot of ways, if the industry doesn't control itself, they're going to be controlled and probably in ways that they don't like. So we just didn't think of that is almost a variation on a theme of cybersecurity in a way, too, from the point of view that hire a bunch of people to think of that.
Yeah.
And although some of this, I think, is pretty obvious that people are going to very quickly twist things around to a nefarious use or what have you, such as
just
the case of
Tay. Just because they can.
Yeah, just because they can and see what happens.
Yeah. So, real world, I can't use the word that came to mind, but people can be real pills.
Yeah, well, mean, destructive, whatever. Mm. Sort of like modern day vandalism, if you will, because mm-hmm. It's electronic. So it's interesting that DeepMind, of course, they have a deep vested interest in
deep thought. If you've never seen,
did I say
you said deep mind?
I did. Well, that's what it is.
Well, deep, that brings to mind deep thought, which, if you're a fan of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, you will find uproariously funny.
Go ahead. Yes,
because we just watched that on Hulu.
Yep.
Yeah, that was.
So where was I? Oh yes, DeepMind has something of a fiscal interest in this and how things get regulated, of course, because if they're too regulated, then that can affect the bottom line. That's part of it. So it would appear that they are taking a lead in being somewhat proactive in being self-governing to a certain extent is kind of how I interpret this.
Interesting idea about, we're not yet at artificial intelligence.
No.
I'm going to say that again.
We'll
we're
be there
a long way,
quite a ways. We call it AI, but it's sort of an artificial AI. Yeah.
But if you have these companions in your home, if you think that the corporates are using them to spy on your every single move, which in my case is probably be boring somebody to tears. What is your choice of what smart speaker you choose to have in your house say about you now? We have both the Home and the Echo through a set of circumstances that were not intentional. We actually bought the Home for a friend of ours who's blind and then promptly realized that this would never work because he couldn't understand the idea of why you would want a speaker that you could talk to when you have. I said, well, you can tell it what music, to play a particular piece of music. Oh, but I have Cirrus. Well, it just plays whatever, whenever.
Right.
He couldn't quite grasp his mind. And the way he asked questions.
Oh, my gosh. The AI would need some time to resolve that.
It would burst into flames. So what does it mean if you if you're shopping and all other things being equal, if you get a Google Home or if you have an Amazon Echo, there's a consumer research firm called Intelligence Research Partners. They surveyed 300 Echo and home owners back in July. It concluded that people who own an Echo, which the author of this article describes as a bad relationship between an air purifier and a lipstick. if you own the Echo, you're somewhat more likely to have an iPhone. 55% of Echo users have an iPhone. 75% of those who bought the Google Home, which looks a little bit like an oversized salt shaker with that slanted top, have Android phones, which makes sense in a way because I think there's an iApp for a Google Home, but I don't think it works as well because if you tie the Google Home through your Gmail account, it all flows together rather seamlessly.
Well, yeah, I mean, be careful what your statistics tell you. There may be a perfectly good reason for that, but here they make it presented as some sort of, you know, hardcore science thing, and there's statistics are fraught with problems if you only look at the surface. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. 15 million Echo devices have been sold. Apple has an installed user base. But Amazon is gaining customer share. Apple, of course, going to be bringing out their HomePod, which is a integrated system for home control. Now, something that I'm really thinking about, and we're just about to wrap up here, Sonos speakers you've got that crappy little speaker in built into your Echo, which does okay, but it's certainly not super, you know, stereo hi-fi or anything. But it can control Sonos speakers, which do sound really sweet, even if they are somewhat on the expensive side.
There you go, all this connectivity.
Take a look at the new Google speaker that's out, this $400 beast. The Google Home Max, $400 bass shaking to release your inner DJ. All the time for this hour is Boomer Tech Radio with Bob and Brenda. Tech news that you can use. And we'll be back after the top of the hour news. Wherever you go, whatever you do, be safe. Be good to each other. Welcome back, Boomer Tech Radio. I'm Bob Belongi.
And I'm Brenda Belongi.
Analog living in a digital world. Goodies, gadgets, gizmos, tech news that you can use. Oh, yes. Now, before we hit the top of the hour, we were talking about Google's announcements during the week, including some new products. And I mentioned very briefly, I wanted to come back to it, there's a Google speaker out, Google Home speaker, that'll set you back $400.
Wow.
But the Google Home Max is going to launch in December. It has a huge speaker in it. It is a home speaker. It'll do all the things that the smaller home speaker does. But when it plays music, you know it. It also has an auxiliary port, so you can plug in anything that uses a mini cable and play music through that. So it doesn't actually give. I was looking at the pictures of this thing. It's probably if you're an audiophile, probably looks like it's got about a 6-inch woofer. Would you say that looks about right? Are you looking at the picture?
Yeah,
of this thing?
That seems about right. It's kind of hard to tell from the picture.
Maybe an 8-inch woofer because there's a Google Home in front of it, and the Google Home is about 8 inches in height from floor to the top of the slant there. So the speaker is sitting right behind it, so it looks to be roughly about a foot across and maybe 8 or 9 inches high.
Something like that.
Yeah. They also, you can get two of them going and have these, you can set Max up with all of your other Google Home devices to play music throughout your house, which is kind of nice. Now, at $400, this thing isn't for everybody, but if you're a serious if you're a serious music and you're just less than happy with the sound quality coming out of a Google Home, you can only do so much with a 2-inch ported speaker.
You know? Well, if you think about it, it could be pretty versatile. You can move it around, and you don't have to have wires and things like that. And plenty of people who were early adopters of audio equipment paid that kind of price for such things. Yeah. Modern version.
Yep.
Speaker technology has changed quite a bit, too. Yep.
So if you do have an Android phone, like we have our Galaxy Note 8s, a lot of people have Pixels, a lot of people have S7s, Galaxy S7, some people have older models. But if you've, every once in a while it helps to look at some of the new apps that are out, or maybe some old favorites that have gone through some updates. So Digital Trends recently did a rundown of the 100 best apps for Android. We're not going to list them all on this program. If you go to the Boomer Tech Radio magazine, you can actually find the article that Digital Trends puts out. But we'll run some interesting apps through here to give you some ideas.
Mm.
Mondly, M-O-N-D-L-Y, is a language interpreting app. It's a virtual reality app that allows you to fully immerse yourself in situations in which you can practice and learn a language. The app offers a number of pre-programmed scenarios for you to explore and practice a number of different languages, including Spanish, French, English, Italian, and more. So it is actually rather than just boring, giving you the English phrase and then the translation, this will put you in a scenario. The one it shows on the screenshot here is, what would you like to drink? And then you can respond, and it gives you the word that you would use to respond. If you would like a juice or a coffee or a water, it gives you the correct word. So going through this enough times, you'll eventually learn the right word. So speaking of words, if you're struggling to think of one, you know there's one out there for the definition you're thinking of. A reverse dictionary is a handy tool. It allows you to search based on the on definitions. Simply type in the definition. You get a list of words that fit that description.
That's kind of cool.
We've all done that.
Yeah. You can't think of the right
word for... What's the word for blah, 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 blah?
Or you're trying to use a different word, find a more appropriate word or one that fits the situation better. So that's kind of a novel twist. Type in the dictionary and get the word, as opposed to look up the word and find the definition.
Not In, I would call Note In, is a note-keeping taking app, which works similar to Google Keep. Note In keeps it set notes and reminders that appear right in your notification tray. The app is beautifully designed. One thing that I would like to see on our Note 8s, and I'm not sure, maybe it'll do it, I just haven't figured out how, is if you write in something like dentist appointment next week, 2 p.m., being able to import that directly into your calendar. Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah, I think. Isn't that what that app is about, the one they
Well,
have?
It makes the note, but will it put it in your calendar automatically?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know that one.
I don't think it will. Too many hoops to jump through, but I bet somebody's working on that. Fitness apps. Now, I've been using the Samsung Fitness app, which is okay, on my Galaxy Note 8. there's a neat fitness app called Gyroscope. Brings together all your fitness information into one easy-to-use, well-designed service. Pulls in information on other apps, or you can add info manually. Keeps track of your steps, weight, and fitness, and so on. Of course, you have to feed it information. The free app does basic tracking. If you want all the features, it'll cost you $10 a month for the pro version. One of the strengths of the Note 8, and coming up, of course, in Android 7.0 Nougat, split screen, where you can have actually two apps open at the same time.
I thought we had that on our note.
Yeah, we do. But if you have an older Android device,
gotcha.
You can get the split screen app With a split screen creator, you can set up preset split screen windows. You can quickly and easily launch two apps in a split screen mode.
That's kind of cool. Yeah. I did something or another with that. I didn't pursue it very far, but it's that's pretty tricky. Yeah. So it's like having two screen monitors in your computer at your desk.
Now, we want to we have a friend who there's members of his family who like to watch movies on the smartphone. Okay, no big deal, but they insist on doing it when they're not tied into the house's Wi-Fi, which your data plan does not like that. Not even a little bit.
Oh, your data plan loves it.
Oh, your data plan loves it. Yeah, yeah.
Your wallet might not like it. Exactly.
So if you want to watch movies on the 4-inch screen, fine. I can't do it. My eyes aren't good enough for that.
Yeah, that's...
But... make sure you're tied to a Wi-Fi.
I like a bigger screen anyway.
Movies chew up your data plan like nobody's business.
Yep.
However, if you want to watch movies on your phone, of course, Netflix, video streaming service. If you've already got it on your home TV, on your home computer, easy enough to use your account and get it going on your phone. I imagine if you've got good eyesight, a Note 8 would be a good Netflix device.
Not too bad. The screen is big enough that it shouldn't be a big problem.
Ditto for Hulu's. Hulu offers thousands of movies and TV shows. We're catching up on some old TV shows for $8 a month. Pretty nice for our Hulu account. We're seeing shows, and they're making shows specially for Hulu now. We watch Handmaid's Tale. We watch Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Service, which you have to be a Douglas Adams fan to really appreciate. Other apps that are good to have, of course, YouTube mobile app, which is good for sharing cat videos with your friends. And, of course, the latest conspiracy videos. We'll talk about that in a minute.
YouTube TV and HBO Now, or what's now called HBO Go, those five round out the entertainment deal, or visual entertainment, you know, movie type things.
If you're into music, of course, Spotify, SoundCloud, Bandcamp, and Google Play Music, and of course the ever popular Apple Music. Yes, you can have Apple Music on your Android device. But as we talked about in the last hour, if you've ever heard a song and you just cannot place it, SoundHound is really handy for recording a snippet of music and telling you what the song is. It's pretty, and we've discovered it's fairly accurate.
Continuing in the media range, the news apps that are good, and of course my screen just decided to upchuck while I was going after that, would be the New York Times, Vice News, which I've never heard of them. They have
Gonzo both, journalism.
Well, they have written and video content. Here it says here, NPR News, National Public Radio News, The Washington Post, and News 360. Those are all listed as the best news sources.
Yeah, News 360 apparently looks at the stories that you pull up, and it starts narrowing down offerings or broadening offerings to you that are more tailored to what it appears that you like to see.
Well, that's kind of obnoxious, because then it assumes that those are the only things you're interested in, which I guess for some people that's true, but sometimes just running around, I come across some interesting things that I wouldn't otherwise if it was spoon-feeding me things. Mm-hmm. Of course, the Washington Post and the New York Times have a long history of quality journalism and reporting and writing in print as well.
Now, if you're a sports fan, of course, ESPN is an app that's been around for a while. The Score gives you the latest results from NASCAR to the NFL, brings you latest touchdowns, goals, and positions as they happen. Other genre applications, CBS Sports and Yahoo Fantasy Sports. So of course, Yahoo Fantasy Sports is aimed at people who play in fantasy game pools. Other Android apps, of course, social media. Everybody knows about Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest. Messaging apps, the best ones, Skype, Messenger, WhatsApp, and Snapchat. Most of these are pretty...
pretty well known already. There's no, you know, kind of surprises here.
Yeah, the dating apps. Maybe you're trying to populate a new phone. Tinder, of course. OkCupid. Biggest dating, one of the biggest dating apps around.
I love the name of this one. Coffee Meets Bagel.
Yeah, Coffee Meets Bagel is interesting. This app, geared towards those who are looking for a real relationship rather than a quick hookup. Tinder, of course, is more the booty call type app. Happen connects you with others you've passed in real life, making that shared glance at a coffee shop into a potential date. You can browse profiles of those you've crossed paths with. If you like one another, you will be able to begin a conversation. So that's interesting. It actually enables a connection. Maybe somebody has you pass that person in the grocery store every day. You go, I wonder if this person's available. Well, you go ask, and you feel like an idiot, right? Or a creep, or a stalker, or something.
But these days, you can't. You don't know. Right. Oh my goodness! The reading apps they list as best is Kindle. That's also well known and quite flexible. We have that and use that, and it's pretty good. Comics and Perfect Viewer. Perfect Viewer is not one I'm familiar with. It's primarily a comic book reader and a library management app.
Now I have the Comixology app, which is also available on Android, which has the entire Marvel catalog, which is kind of nice. As well as if you have Comixology Unlimited, you can see a lot of comics all for one low price.
If you're into blogging, then Tumblr is fairly well known. Medium is one I've not heard of. WordPress, that's fairly well known, and also Blogger. Those are fairly well known ones that I've heard of anyway.
Yep. Now, if you're into gaming, of course, the PlayStation app, there's Steam.
Oh, yes. Steam is interesting.
Yeah, I have a Steam account for my PC. With the Android app, users can access the Steam community, browse the store, and purchase new games. I assume that you're, and of course, if you like to watch other people play games, you can subscribe to Twitch TV, which I've never really gotten into. Watching somebody else play a game is, I don't know, sort of like watching the paint dry, right?
Yeah. I guess it depends on whether you're in the game yourself or not. So if you're watching an orchestra, if you've played a particular instrument, perhaps you're more interested in that specific instrument and how well a person may or may not be playing.
So anyway, that's just a rundown of some of the most popular Android apps. No big surprises here. Most of the possibilities for the smartphone have been explored in one way or another, but always a chance to... Now, we're installing, of course, navigation apps because we own a boat, and we're getting ready to go someplace where we've never been before. So... if you are a boating type person, you can get the coastal charts, but about the only one that covers lakes and other water, you know, inland waterways is, of course, the Navionics app, Navionics US app. Not cheap, but the charts, as you have seen, Brenda, are extremely detailed for places like Whiskeytown and Shasta, at least. And we're going to try it out down in the Sacramento Delta in a couple of weeks. So we'll report back on how good the... But we also have another app, the name of which I don't have right in front of me, but we'll see how they compare to having the paper charts, because we also have a full set of paper charts on the boat because we like to know where we are.
And we have... Also, like to anticipate hazards, which, on the other hand, there's, you know, you always have to be looking out the window for those, too. Things move around down there.
Toy manufacturers lately have found themselves getting into some hot water, trying to push out toys that are, 'cause kids want connected toys, or the parents think the kids want connected toys. Kid will take the connected toy out of the box and play with the box, right? Mm-hmm.
Isn't that the way it works, right?
Yeah. Aristotle was a smart home hub aimed specifically at kids. Mattel's Nabi brand was going to send it out. It was a artificial intelligence, AI, machine learning. It was executives has decided that the Aristotle is not fully aligning with the Mattel's technology strategy. Health and privacy advocates petitioned the toy giant to scrap the device. They argued that it would give the company an unprecedented look into the personal lives of children. Now, we've already run into the, you know, the Barbie with the creepy camera thing going on inside it, or recording a lot of things. That was a little bit of a scary situation.
Well, along that same line, to add creep factor in there, there was a lady that bought a small internet-connected camera, local convenience store, whatever that means. This happened to be in the Netherlands.
Who buys a security device at a convenience store?
You gotta wonder, right? But she wanted to use the device to keep an eye on her puppy while she was away from the house, although apparently it wasn't only the puppy that was being watched.
Yes. The spooked woman said in a Facebook post she heard sounds in the living room and walked up, and the camera was moving around. The device was very simple to set up, apparently, but the thing started talking to her.
Right.
Obviously, somebody had hacked into it.
Right. So this was purchased at a store called Action, which is a discount chain store, mostly sells low-budget convenience utilities, it says here. And so what you do is you basically connect it to your Wi-Fi and plug it in an outlet and give it a password, and it should be a safe installation. And you can operate it on the phone and see and listen to hear what's going on in your house, only this wasn't that secure of a deal. What happened is she initially ignored the tool's faulty behavior and didn't really pay much attention, but this thing was moving around.
Yeah, it was following her. It was tracking her.
Right.
So it was obviously under remote control. She started, now there's a video on YouTube apparently, or on Facebook, where she was interacting with it, and it actually got pretty vulgar. Now the thing is in Danish. Well, was she in Denmark? Netherlands.
In Netherlands.
So it was in Dutch, and so I can't quite interpret what it was saying, but it's obvious.
Well, one of them was
the exchange quickly degenerated.
Well, apparently the first time and the thing that caused her to unplug it immediately was that it was in French, bonjour madame, and tout bien avec vous, essentially hello lady.
Yeah.
We're all with you, more or less. My French isn't that good, but and then so it freaked her out. So she pulled the plug on it, stuffed it back in the box, and she decided to give it one more round. And this time, when she plugged it in, it creepily said, "Hola, señorita."
Yeah. Now we've heard about, of course, the baby monitor that somebody hacked into and was saying swear words at the baby and things like that. So along the same lines, the Mattel device is hackable and is sending personal information commentary. Now, an argument can be made that you should not have, if you're at all worried about these things, a home or a Echo in your house at all, because the government or the corporations will spy on you. Well, I'm probably a pretty boring subject.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think I'm terribly interesting, but that's beside the point. They shouldn't be doing that anyway. I mean, you know, the way we're kind of do things here is you have a right to privacy. They do make the point in this article, however, that no one else that bought one of these cameras had complained about this. And so was
My
it.
My bet is maybe somebody got hold of the device and built a back door into it.
It's
and
possible.
Put it back on the shelf.
That particular one, yep. And or there was something about her Wi-Fi connection that had already been hacked or something of that nature. It's very possible.
Back in 2016, of course, we told you about Genesis Toys. They had devices that were secretly recording every sound they could pick up and then selling that data using algorithms to turn speech to text to third-party advertising and marketing firms. Where does it cross? It's creepy enough when something that you happen to have looked up on Amazon
shows
up in your Facebook feed.
Yeah, that's very, very annoying.
It's a little scary.
I tend to ignore that stuff other than being freaked out. But, like, how does this know I went looking there for that? But it doesn't usually work too well to shove those ads for me. I just ignore them.
Oh, dear me. Hey, did you ever have a ThinkPad, a genuine IBM ThinkPad?
No, I don't think so. We had Lenovo desktops at work for a while, but no ThinkPads. You did?
Yes. Well, back in the early 2000s, when I got back from San Diego, that one of the first computers I bought for myself was an IBM ThinkPad. It actually had a Pentium 3 processor, which wasn't around for very long. They didn't make many Pentium 3 processors. They quickly went to the Pentium 4 and then, of course, on to the iSeries processors. The ThinkPad has been around in its same basic form for 25 years. Now, IBM sold off the ThinkPad line to Chinese manufacturer Lenovo, but Lenovo is now selling a 25th anniversary edition with the same basic construction, you know, the same design aesthetic of the 25-year-old design, which is a good design, and it has something that I like that Brenda doesn't like, and that's they actually call it a mouse nipple. And what it is it looks like a little red eraser in the exact center of the keyboard, and it's a little teeny tiny joystick. When you don't want to mess with the touchpad, you can use this to steer the mouse around.
I never got used to using one of those. I loved it. Yeah. You should go get one of these. You're going to be standing at Walmart with your cup out for what it costs.
Yeah, and Intel, it's got some pretty decent specs on this thing. Like I said, my ThinkPad, which was right around $1,000.
And is it 2 inches thick still?
It was the slimmest computer I'd ever owned. It had it built in. I remember when I ordered it and everything. And it fired up just in a jiff. Of course, as time went on, it really turned into a dog. Pretty decent specifications, a Intel i7, GeForce 940, NVIDIA GeForce graphics, has a 14-inch HD touch display. The tricky part here is that it retails for about $1,900. You can get a similarly tricked-out Dell for about $1,700. But it is, if you're a fan of these machines. Interesting, the build quality of the machines is legendary. The International Space Station basically runs on them. They run on Linux, and they probably got one of the best keyboards on a laptop type machine. The ThinkPad 25th anniversary. All right, time to take our bottom of the hour break. It is Boomer Tech Radio with Bob, Brenda. Tech news you can use and more after this. Welcome back. It's Boomer Tech Radio. I'm Bob. She's Brenda. This is Tech News You Can Use. Hey, that theme music, that catchy little tune that takes us in and out of the breaks. It's composed and performed by George Wood. It is called 8-Bit Junkie, and it is used by permission. Now, as we go into our final segment here, we do want to say that our somehow thoughts and prayers seems terribly inadequate, but our best wishes are for the folks down in the city of Las Vegas, which, since you heard the last episode of the show, went through this horrific event that we will not say too much about, except you had to expect this. YouTube is spreading conspiracy theories about the Vegas shooting, and if you've watched Facebook or anything, you've seen just these proof that there were multiple shooters and proof of this and proof of that. In the immediate aftermath of the Las Vegas shooting, Facebook and Google News faced harsh criticism for spreading information, but they were not the only ones. Get how fast these people work. As early as the morning after the shooting, The third YouTube search result for Las Vegas shooting was for videos from AMTV, a conservative conspiracy theory channel. The video hinted at the possibility that the shooter was acting on behalf of the government or another agency. That video was taken down, but AMC's other shooting-related videos include, what if the Las Vegas shooter was a government agent and not a madman? Yeah, meanwhile, the search for information on the gunman yielded videos from conspiracy sites that attempt to politicize the shooting.
Conspiracy site or otherwise, very quickly, media and technology was able to politicize it.
YouTube searches throughout Monday were littered with results containing unproven theories trying to link the shooter to the anti-fascist movement. One reason for a glut of, nature abhors a vacuum. And, of course, in the aftermath of one of these horrific events, police work is not done on a CIS schedule or an NCIS schedule.
45 minutes of film.
Yeah. It takes time to develop this. And the number of self-appointed experts in ballistics, acoustics, landscape design astound me. Absolutely astound me. But where there are people who will freely believe anything they want, there are those who will feed them exactly what they're expecting.
I just call some of that stuff irresponsible. It just doesn't make sense. This is why I don't watch it or seek it out.
Yep.
There's no point.
Let's see here. There's some of these things, false flag proof. As of late Tuesday, the third result for Las Vegas shooting was a video purporting to prove the attack was a false flag. By Wednesday morning, it had more than 1 million views. The result returned a video. The fourth result returned a video attempting to debunk the mainstream media coverage of the shooting and included a thumbnail asking, "What is the media hiding?" Now, I will be the first to say that a lot of the mainstream news, a lot of corporate media news, is nonsense. But have we reached a point where it's just an immediately given that anything they say is wrong? That anything they say is they're just a tool of the government? Where have we wound up?
Or that anything someone puts out is truth.
Yeah.
It works both ways.
Exactly. So, and I know a lot of very otherwise rational people, but this is more the usual suspect stuff, that if people are disinclined to trust the government and think that there are great conspiracies afoot, and I'm not saying there aren't, I'm just saying I have not seen proof that convinces me. And what somebody can put together with Photoshop and a little bit of creative editing, because I'm a creative editor myself, I know what can be done in the video editing realm. I'm not terribly convinced of some of the theories. And they can't all be right, can they?
Well,
that's the thing.
Sometimes knowing how something can be put together is good insulation from thinking that some of this stuff is real, because some of it is pretty well done.
Yeah, as a for instance, one of the proofs that this guy was actually a government agent. How could this 65-year-old man carry all that equipment up to a hotel room? A senior citizen can't carry that heavy stuff.
Who's writing that?
If that's what somebody said on a news show. And Carl and I are sitting here. Carl's, a couple of years older than I am. We're both in our 60s. And we're going, yeah? Really? Maybe all the 60-something guys would be incapable. No, you're not going to carry it all at once. You're going to throw the bags, black, nylon, ballistic bag. Wouldn't have to be black. You make blue ones. They could say display case on them. Throw them on a luggage cart. Make multiple trips. It's not proof.
Pay the valet. Or pay the, not the valet,
the police.
Bellhops and such like. Yeah, yes.
But we're gonna let that go.
Well, yeah. It's the point.
It's the danger. But we've talked about it on this show. The danger.
It's so easy for things
of of spread. Misuse of video.
Yep, unfortunately.
In case you care, and I'm one of the people I'm going to say I don't really, Microsoft is bringing the Edge browser. Have you ever used the Edge browser? The one that Microsoft says is so much better than Chrome?
No, it's not.
I've tried it a couple of times and been unimpressed. At least it doesn't try to force feed you into Bing on everything anymore, because people were getting tired of that. more proof that Microsoft is embracing Android and iOS and would really rather forget about the Windows phone. The company is launching an Edge browser for iOS, promising Edge for Android coming soon, and also the Microsoft launcher for Android. I'm not that impressed. It's that very simplistic interface. I'm used to Google. I know they're skimming my stuff, but I'm used to their results.
Right.
And I just, so far I've seen nothing that convinces me that I need to jump ship and immediately start using Edge exclusively.
I think.
Because they're gathering my crap too.
Exactly. I was going to say, Google's not the only one that does that. Not by a long shot.
So, not impressed. All right. So, We've been watching Hulu, but we'll go back and forth, watch Netflix sometimes.
Yeah,
we have Amazon Prime.
Just looking at different content.
Got to pop up back over to HBO. We have HBO Go on our Fire Stick. And there's some new movies coming out. We got to see what the latest crop of movies are. We can't keep up with all this stuff.
Wow, that's the problem. Something to be said for having only one service, so that's what you're limited to watching.
Then all your friends, did you see such and such?
I know.
Like, I want to see Stranger Things. That's supposed to be a really good series. We started to watch Black Mirror. The first episode of Black Mirror that we watched had us kind of going, okay.
Yeah, that was maybe you have to watch a few more. We haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah. It's become a heavy pop culture thing.
One of the things that...
Technology gone wrong.
Yeah, one of the things that... you can get into is if you're paying, you know, $10 a month for four or five different services. Now you're talking about cable, monthly cable type fees, except
yeah,
that.
But.
Well, there's no ads.
Yep.
And you can watch a lot of content. You can binge watch. I mean, to me.
You're watching it when you want to watch
it. Yep. And what you want to watch. It's not being, you know, the schedule isn't set by anybody but you. So that's nice. But to that end, Netflix is upping their prices.
Yep.
A dollar or so. Their highest premium one is.
Yeah, the lowest tier price, $7.99. Is not going to change, but the standard plan, which allows a high definition and two simultaneous streams, will go to $10.99 from $9.99.
Right, and they're highest level.
If you want 4K, you'll go up to $14 a month.
Right,
going to be a while. I don't know if I'll ever actually go 4K because as the TVs improve, my eyes get worse.
Well, and then there's, if everybody's on 4K, then there's the bandwidth issues.
Yeah.
It'll be a while.
Yeah, going to be a...
we're usually not early adopters anyway.
Now, back in 2015, Netflix raised prices for new members and then ungrandfathered existing customers into the new rates. People actually got a little bit upset with Netflix. It's still a good bargain, but you're not, like on satellite TV... When you subscribe to a package of shows,
most of which you don't want.
Yeah, you don't watch most of those channels. So this way, at least you're watching
right.
Stuff that you do like.
The other nice thing is if you have a group of people over, it's a whole lot cheaper. I mean, 1 month on Netflix is less than one ticket.
Yeah.
For a new movie. Not that going to the theater is bad, because that's a whole different experience. But the other thing is you can put it on pause and go make a bathroom break.
Yeah.
And not miss anything.
Well, another neat thing that...
Sit there in your jammies.
Both Netflix and Hulu, which we also subscribe to, they're getting more and more into original content.
Right. That's the really cool thing. And there has been some very fine original content come about.
Yeah. So we watch the ones we can, but I want to start watching Stranger Things. That should be a real interesting show.
I don't even know what it's about, but I've heard it's a good.
Yep.
It's kind of fun to browse through the movies and say, "Oh yeah, I didn't see that," or "Oh yeah, what's that about? That looks interesting."
So, while we are not likely to see self-driving cars on the freeways of America anytime soon, because there are so many variables, and in rural roads, way too many variables. Those are probably going to be drive it yourself for quite some time. But in enclosed communities, city routes where, you know, the roads don't change and conditions, you might have the kid run out in front of the car or something, but non-freeway conditions.
Right.
Self-driving cars would be a natural fit for retirement communities. So rather than
Sun City, instead of having golf carts running around. Right.
Instead of all the golf carts, which can be problematic when the weather's bad.
Oh, no. That is no problem. You have never seen the enclosed golf carts?
Oh, dear.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. They're all-weather transportation now.
Driverless vehicle firm Voyager has opted to deploy self-driving taxis at the Villages, a gated community with about 4,000 elderly residents in San Jose. It's a good test bed for these vehicles. It's two modified Ford Fusions on 15 miles of road with a 25-mile-an-hour speed limit. Testing on the open road could mean a lot of regulatory hoops. In this private location, they can work out the bugs because with a speed limit of 25 and always the same roads, you can detect problems. If something goes wrong, the car simply pulls over and waits for service.
Uh-huh. In the meantime, your ice cream in the truck melts because you've just been to the store.
Well, one would presume that help is summoned very quickly. Voyage considers the San Jose retirement community the perfect spot to test its technology. It has intersections, crosswalks, roundabouts, construction, pedestrians, U-turns, one-way streets, animal cars, and much more. So it is essentially the cars are learning how to get around, and as it comes up with as situations develop, the cars are being monitored and solutions worked out. And that goes just like we do when we're learning to drive a car. We add to our experience.
Yep. More AI, machine learning.
Survey suggests many people are wary of self-driving technology, but the seniors in the Villages are delighted with it. Autonomous shuttles was one of the top responses in a recent survey about desired amenities for the community. Some of the elderly folks have even been asking how they can invest in the technology.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah. So here we are. The older folks are the first ones to embrace this particular technology. And for good reason. And this is how, and I'm predicting that the next stage of this, rather than self-driving cars for everybody, is going to be in-city transportation, scaled electric vehicles that when you need more come out of the garage. When they're not actually being used, they go to the nearest charging station and charge up and wait for the next call, rather than having the Uber driver sitting there, you know, waiting.
Yeah, it'd be,
the car simply responds.
It's like Uber, but without the driver.
Yeah. So that's what Uber was investing a lot of money in, researching, how to make the most of this technology. And I think we're going to see it in urban areas first.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. To some extent, it's going to be very interesting, and this would take quite some time. Just as the automobile changed the way some things are done in a city, town, whatever, layout, you know, you have to have streets and that sort of thing. How are things going to change with these self-driving cars? Are people going to live closer to a city center, for instance? But what about groceries and whatnot? Is that all going to come back to more of like the traditional European-style city where you can buy stuff at the corner market, and there's apartments over the top of it, and, you know, so live, work, play all in the same local area. Maybe that's going to foster a revamp
modular
of
communities.
Some, yeah, revamp of urban design. I don't know.
Yep.
Be very interesting to see what happens with that.
We heard about this story last week. We're just now starting to get some more information about it. Federal officials, of course, according to USA Today, investigating the drone collision, a U.S. Army helicopter near New York City. A private drone in the Army helicopter. The helicopter was an Army UH-60 Black Hawk. The drone was a DJI Phantom 4. Happened east of Staten Island, according to the NTSB. The helicopter was flying security for a United Nations meeting. So naturally, the officials were a little upset.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention the mess that a Black Hawk would make smacking into the ground or the building.
But the fact that somebody was out there with a drone
now
watching things, obviously.
The drone pilot has been contacted by federal authorities. Don't you think he was making a mess in his britches? Safety investigators were notified after the incident and have opened up a investigation. The Army investigating it as a mishap. The NTSB involved because a drone is technically a civilian aircraft. And the FAA, this guy's going to be in a heap of trouble.
Interestingly enough, they recovered the motor and an arm of the drone hung up on the helicopter.
Yeah.
As it landed, they were able to recover that equipment of it.
The drone struck the windshield and the main rotor blade and transmission deck. The helicopters are built fairly tough. Had this been a civilian ship that wasn't as well protected, this could have ended very, very badly. This is just the latest in a lot of incidents, near misses, but difficult to confirm collisions. It's one thing to hit a bird, but another thing to hit a big plastic and metal and lithium-ion battery drone. What would happen if somebody intentionally steered the drone into the path of a landing airliner so it sucked into the engine?
Lovely. You think of the best things.
DJI says that they are, of course, they're one of the biggest drone manufacturers out there. They are, a spokesman for the firm says they're, they instruct drone operators to obey the laws and regulations. Millions of people safely use drones for professional and personal uses. They hope that they will that the pilots will behave themselves. Now, there have been efforts to regulate this stuff. And, of course, the Cal Fire and the U.S. Forest Service have had headaches with these drones showing up over active fire situations because of the official aircraft that get interfered with. They have to bring everything down and wait and go find the drone operator. Congress debating more legislation to allow commercial uses of drones, such as deliveries, having the aircraft further away than the pilot operator. This is Amazon's kind of pushing for this. They want to be able to have the drone get out of the sight of a human operator in order to deliver those packages, pizzas or whatever.
Well, yeah, I would think in order for that to be useful, that would be the case. Speaking of drone delivery, which is the dream of folks like Amazon and whatnot, Amazon is actually delving into its own delivery company to rival FedEx and UPS. So the idea there was that they could put more items on out to folks in the free 2-day shipping thing with Prime, and reduce the inventory in their warehouses so they didn't have so much stuff stacked up waiting to be delivered by others.
So you could select UPS or FedEx or Amazon service. You can also get the Amazon Locker service, which is actually a couple here in the town we're in, Redding, California, where you order, you have the package delivered to the locker, and then you go pick it up there rather than having it. This is good, especially if you're in an area where packages on your porch might disappear before you get home.
Yeah, no kidding.
So
crazy stuff.
I don't know if drone delivery is going to work out because
too many drones.
Too many drones, and also too many people are just going to see if they can, just because they can, swat the thing out of the sky, just
steal whatever
giggles.
It is. Yep. Yeah. The imminently recognizable pizza box, airborne pizza box. Ooh, free pizza.
Yeah.
Except that
that's like the delivery drones that they're now outlawed in San Francisco, but the rolling ice chests. Mm. That was not going to work because somebody would come along, kick it over, bust it open with a sledgehammer, destroy the $4,000 drone to get the $2 meal out of it. You know, or probably a $20 meal out of it.
I don't know. It's San Francisco. It might be more.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
People can be, you know, the stuff that looks
so
great
destructive.
On paper.
Yeah, it is not terribly good in practical application.
Doesn't turn out practical. It's like the sex robot thing. You know, it got torn to pieces by a freaked out mob. And they weren't angry at it. They were just... They were smashing it up because they could. Anyway. Hey, it's a great show. We love doing bringing the show to you. Boomer Tech Radio. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. Go to boomertechradio.com for show notes and other links. Wherever you go, whatever you do, be safe and be good to each other.